now break net and take you live to Fleet Battle Station Ticonderoga, deep inside the Arachnid quarantine zone, where the men and women of the Federal Armed Services prepare to attack.
DXQ, uplink on 2, 1, you're on.
No one here in the AQZ knows exactly when the invasion of Tlandathu will occur, but everyone's talking about it, and the talk says tomorrow. Here's a bunch of MI kids that look like they could eat bugs for lunch.
Yum, yum, yum.
So, Trooper, you're not too worried about fighting the arachnids?
Hey, shoot a nuke down a bug hole, you got a lot of dead bugs,
I just hope it's not over before we get some.
Some say the bugs were provoked by the intrusion of humans into their natural habitat, that a live-and-let-live policy is preferable to war with the bugs.
Let me tell you something. I'm from Buenos Aires, and I say kill them all!
Yeah! Oh, yeah! 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 Oh, yeah!
Hey guys, welcome back to the Blood and Black Run podcast. I'm Ryan from ColdSplitation.com, and I'm joined with my co-host Martin.
How's it going?
Doing pretty well. Back again, new episode. And we wanted to do a little tie-in to something popular that's occurring. We don't normally do, well, we try to shy away from popular things, right? It's all cult film, all, you know, low budget, terrible slashers all the time here at Blood and Black Run podcast. But
there was a 5-year period where we were catching those comic book clicks.
Yeah, that's true. But today we want to do a little tie-in. It's been a fairly popular video game that's been out recently. Unfortunately, I bought it, but I haven't even had a chance to play it. But Helldivers 2 has really been getting some popularity here. And we thought that it would be a perfect time to do a movie that is very much an inspiration for Helldivers 2. Quite clearly, one of the biggest inspirations to the video game. And you've been playing the video game, right?
Yeah, I love it. It's great. I didn't love it for the first 2 days because the server capacity was constantly... Yeah. You know, waiting an hour and a half trying to get in, and I said, fuck this game. Mm-hmm. This game's a piece of shit. Yeah. And until they fix that, this game's nothing but a piece of shit. And broke our buddy Matt's heart because he's the one that conned me into getting it. And he's like, no, but it's a great game. They're a small developer. You know, this is a good thing, a good thing. And I'm like, it's crap. Well, they got it fixed within like 2 days, and it's been great. I've been having fun.
Yeah. That's all I heard from you is... Especially that first day downloading. It's like, no, it's terrible. It's terrible. Don't get it. And then, you've been sending me memes ever since that I have no idea what the fuck they were talking about. So,
Hey, you know what's great, too? When we were getting breakfast yesterday, he was saying to me, you know, you haven't apologized to me yet for being right. I go, and I never will.
Yeah, that's right. No need.
I go, you'll be on your deathbed, and I might say it.
Take your, you know what? You can just tell them it just makes up for Ghost Recon.
There's no making up for that for Future Soldier.
It's,
I remind him that at least once a month, like, hey,
it's a step in the right direction. But yeah. Like I said, unfortunately, I wanted to play the game in preparation to like kind of discuss that today, but, I just really haven't had a chance to. So.
Don't lie. You've been playing Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
That is true. I do play that a lot with my wife because it's the game that we could play together. But so I haven't checked it out, but it very much is related to the movie that we picked today. We kind of wanted to have that be a tie-in. We're talking about Starship Troopers from 1997.
From Paul Verhoeven.
Paul Verhoeven film. Yeah, and we've done one other Paul Verhoeven film, RoboCop.
Which is a travesty. And I could have, to be honest with you, sworn, and this is where our amnesia is starting to kind of take over. I could have sworn we did Starship Troopers at some point, like in the early years. But
No, I mean, and I can tell you for a fact, this is one of those ones where I know we definitely didn't do it, because I've only seen Starship Troopers one time. I saw it, and this is kind of like a sticking point. It's a core memory for me, but I saw it back in I don't know if it was exactly 1997, because I would have only been 8 years old, 9 years old at the time when that came out. So I don't know if it was exactly at that period, but I was pretty young, and I remember wanting to see it. My parents, I don't know why the MPAA does their thing of rating it with, you know, an R rating. And at that time, too, I don't think they gave like the specificity of the rating like they do now, where it's like rated R for lewd language and
titties.
Sexual situations, graphic nudity. I don't think they did that back then. It was just like stamp an R on it, call it a day. Like, people use their discretion. So I don't know why my parents didn't use discretion at that time, where they were like, oh, I don't know, he's 10 years old, R rating. Well, let's give it a go. But whatever the case may be, I did, you know, I think we rented it on VHS from my dad's shop. Maybe even not at that time. I can't remember if he still had it or not. And yeah, watched it with my parents, and they were mortified at all of the new, you know, like the shared shower situation in the movie, the brain sucking from the brain bug, and all the, you know, graphic ultra violence that was on there. And they were just like, we should shut this off. But you know what? I was watching it, sitting there in front of the television, saying, no, don't shut it off. I love this. I love this graphic violence. Guys getting ripped apart. I love it. So they didn't.
Bugs look so real.
At that time, yeah, maybe.
Those arachnids look so real.
Yeah. So, I mean, whatever reason, I saw it back then, and I have very clear memories of various elements of it. Like I said, it's been a while since I've seen it, been years and years, and I've never seen it since. So it was a nice, nice way to get back to it. And you said you've seen this like a bunch of times, right?
Oh, I've seen it like a million times. Yeah,
this is one of those movies where you just like come back to it. And I think you said that it was like you've seen it a lot on TV too, and like it's an abridged version. Because it was a popular movie to play on TV back in the day. And I don't know what was it on, like Spike or something? Did Spike play it a lot? Or
I think Spike, Sci-Fi, and USA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, popular.
But yeah, I didn't see it when it came out, obviously, but it's something that they play it all the time on TV. And it's a film I've seen a million times, edited in, you know, for TV and, you know, not unedited.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great film. I love Starship Troopers. I think it's, you know, just a hilarious, good, fun romp.
Yeah. So I guess with this one, it was nice to come back to it, but also we wanted to check, you know, like, what would you say the similarities are between Helldivers 2, that's so popular right now for whatever reason, and Starship Troopers before we actually get into the movie?
Well, the main thing is serving a giant fascist Earth and doing it in the name of, you know, in Starship Troopers, it's, you know, become a citizen. In Super, for Helldivers, it's for managed democracy, which basically just means, yeah, you vote, but your vote doesn't mean anything. You're still a fascist, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and they're fighting bugs. That's one of the fronts that you can fight on is the Terminids, which are bugs. And I did play the original Helldivers 2 back when that came out like 10 years ago for a little bit. I wasn't like a big fan of it because it was like a top-down kind of like modern-day like kind of strata type thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was like nifty for a little bit and like yelling like, you know, freedom, do it for liberty, you know.
So you think that the third person shooter element to it has kind of made it explode into the game that it is, instead of, you know?
Yeah, and like it's not doing anything different, but it's just what it does well, and it's just a ball of fun. Like I was telling you, if you try soloing, you can. It's just not fun. It's nowhere near as fun. You need people that you can talk to and play with, you know, to have, you know, the camaraderie and fun. And that's what makes it fun.
Team based, and do you feel like you're in Starship Troopers as the third person, you know, blasting
away at bugs? Yeah, one of like the randoms just sitting there holding down the fire button. Oh yeah, because Because for my early build, when I unlocked the light machine gun, the Stalwart, that's all I would do. I would just hold down 200, rounds and be like, just mowing, shit down to give suppressive fire. And there's a lot of not the game, is inspired by a lot of things, like Halo, which Halo is also inspired by, Starship Troopers. And, but there's a bunch of references and the trophies and some of the things they say, somebody will say I'm from Buenos Aires, Clandathu is in the game, but it's slightly renamed. I can't remember what it's, called, but mm-hmm. It's just slightly changed up. All the strict tips as you're diving in are these, stupid Starship Trooper-esque, kind of jokes of remember the three courages when fighting an automaton: courage, cover, and more courage. And if at first you don't succeed, dive again. And some of my most favorite one is, there's two really good ones that will pop up every now and then. Are you thinking about talking diplomacy with the enemy? Don't. We must not believe their lies. And also, are you finding yourself curious about alien artifacts? You shouldn't be. Thought crimes are treason. stuff like that. So yeah. It's just got the quirk and character, and just charming.
And it's kind of interesting too, because at the time, Starship Troopers wasn't really well received back in 1997. It was kind of misunderstood. But it has since had a pretty big cult film resurgence. And I was telling you, in the metal community, it's actually a pretty, widely used bit of in-joke for song titles and things like that. Like the band Curl Up and Die, they have quite a number of song titles that are named after phrases in the movie, things like that. There's a record label, Zegama Beach, too, that took its name from, location in Starship Troopers. So it's kind of interesting how it's, it's gained popularity over time, and probably a lot more well-received now than it ever was when it first came out. So,
well, that's most of Verhoeven's work at first. They're misunderstood. And
Robocop 2 was semi like that as well. It wasn't necessarily as appreciated as it is today, but... all right, so let's take a break real quick before we go into the actual movie, and we'll talk about the beer that we got on the show today, which is one that we've had. We've had this brewery a number of times. It's one of the most popular breweries today, Sierra Nevada. And they've just come out with a new 19.2-ounce can, which, if you've been following along, a lot of breweries are doing this now. They're doing a 19.2-ounce can that they put in singly, get it in the cooler. And it's kind of like that, an idea of the candy aisle at the end of the, at the cash register, where you see it and you're like, all right, you got me. I'll take that Reese's, because I'm a fucking fat ass. And I just feel like I need it now when I get there. It's a necessity. So,
At our local Stewart's, they have at that end cap at the register where they put the new candies, they have a chocolate donut flavored Kit Kat, to which my thought was, aren't Kit Kats essentially chocolate covered donuts? So,
yeah, pretty much.
Well, what is this?
Even more donut flavor. I love the idea of the 19.2-ounce can, and Sierra Nevada has been doing it for a bit with their hazy little thing, which is in itself part of a whole series of beers that they've been doing called the Little Thing series. And they've kind of made this a sort of a FOMO type thing where you feel like you can't miss out on the next iteration in the series. So you're kind of get that I've got to get out there and get it. I got to try it, OCD type thing. And they've also had Big Little Thing too, right? Which is a different double IPA, that they've put out into 19.2-ounce cans. Cause again, the 19.2-ounce cans, not only are they bigger cans, they also tend to put double IPAs that are high percentage in there, 8%. I think, Dogfish Head has 11%. So they
Voodoo
they,
Ranger's the king of it. They just shit out shitty versions of the Voodoo Ranger IPA and, you know, make them like what I tell everybody. They're the malt liquor of, you know, craft beer, essentially. Yeah. It's not technically malt liquor, but those double IPAs they put in those tall boys are essentially malt liquor that you're drinking. Because like, yeah, buddy, I want that hoppy taste, but I want to get fucked up real good real quick. Woo, you know.
So for this one, New Sierra Nevada did put out a new little thing. And this one's called the Cosmic Little Thing.
Ooh.
Cosmic.
So not only, you know, it's not just hazy. You're in the fucking stratosphere surrounded by the Milky Way. So this one's basically a double IPA version of the hazy little thing, I believe. You know, it's probably using a lot of the same base. There's not a lot of information about what is specifically hopped into the Cosmic that it makes it different from their Big Little Thing in terms of a double IPA. I assume the double IPA, the Big Little Thing, is meant to be more like a West Coast style IPA rather than a hazy. And then
I've only had it like once or twice. Cause
me too.
It's just not as good as the hazy. And to be honest with you, like the kind of like the doubling of like the hazy little thing. The hazy already stands in at like almost 7%.
Yeah, it's 6.7.
So it's kind of like, what's the point?
So with this one, I noticed drinking it that it's because I had the hazy like right just before it. So kind of had that little ability to compare on the palate. And I would say that the Cosmic Little Thing is slightly, it's definitely more alcohol. You can definitely tell that. It's slightly more citrus based. Like it's you get more of that citrusy flavor to it that is more pronounced. And it does have a sweeter element to it too because of its double IPA nature. Generally, you start doing doubles and triples, they just tend to get sweeter as they go along. And I would say that that's true of the Cosmic as well. In terms of standing out, I don't know that it does stand out as like something that you must have over the hazy. I feel like in my particular case, I probably would just pick the hazy for most instances of me going out and getting a 19.2% can. But it's good all around. It's just, you know, there's not a lot of discerning characteristics to it that make it a lot different than some of the other things that Sierra Nevada has been doing. What did you think?
Yeah, I would agree with a lot of that. It's and as I'm looking on the Sierra Nevada page, it's got Comet Eureka Helio Simcoe and Strata.
Oh, okay. So they listed on the website. They don't list it on the can, yeah, I don't believe.
So that's like the first time I think that I've had like Comet and Helios and Eureka. It's not really anything I've ever really heard of, so. Maybe that's where they got the, you know,
they just made it up. They just made it up for the Cosmic.
Their own crossbreeding, you know, for hops. But you're right. Like for me, especially with like a lot of these double IPAs that come in, like those tall boys like that, when they just double it up, it kind of just the beauty of the original kind of just goes meh, and the beer itself becomes, excuse me, a lot more rosiny. Like, which is something that you really, you know, shouldn't see in a NIPA because they're, you know, they're not West Coast style. They're not supposed to be piney. They're not supposed to be rosiny. But that usually the extra alcohol and hop kick to it does lead them to be, you know, have a kind of funky rosiny aftertaste at the end.
Yeah.
But I do think it was good, you know. I don't think it's discerning enough, like, differently to, you know, make me ever really want to run out and grab it. But that's like the kind of critique I've had of all the little things that they've released since the hazy, like the juicy, the sunny. We haven't tried the crisp, you know, the hazy double. There's all like not enough, like, you know, there to make it different. But it's the same thing though with like Sloop. Sloop, basically, as we talk about, we, you know, do their thing, you know, do their IPAs on here. They have a certain style. They have a certain way of doing it. They slightly tinker on the margins and you go from there and decide whether or not it's enough for you to be invested.
Yeah.
They also, I just noticed too, they have listed on their website a dank little thing.
Oh, I don't think we've ever seen that one.
No.
And I'm curious to know, what's the difference? What makes it dank versus hazy? Well,
that's got the Amarillo and Chinook and Mosaic to make it, you know.
Okay.
Like a fiddlehead, you know. All right.
Well, yeah, I mean, I like the Little Thing series. It's nice to always try the new ones and see what they've got going on there. And I liked Cosmic Little Thing. I don't know if it's going to replace, like, Hazy. I feel like Hazy is the best in their line of Little Things that kind of stands out. I don't know. It's just one that they do really well and one that you can always come back to. So, and I'm sure it's available around you because Sierra Nevada is distributing pretty much everywhere. So I think you'll be able to find Cosmic Little Thing pretty easily in your convenience store or liquor store, wherever you get your beer. It's going to be there. So check it out. All right, let's talk about Starship Troopers. Starship Troopers. You know, we were talking earlier about how this movie was sort of misunderstood when it came out. And it's pretty funny to look at, you know, the reviews at the time of what people were saying about it when it came out, because there are a couple things in particular that they point out. One being that it seems fascist. Paul Verhoeven's really doubling down on the fascism here. And then two, that it has a lot of somewhat like no-name actors that or poor acting. And I think like both of those things kind of go together, because immediately in this movie, you are subjected to a nice propaganda video.
Which that is also to tie into Helldivers. Every time I'm interested in playing with my friend Matt, I send him that opening to him every time. Join the mobile infantry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing my part.
It's just funny because that opening where, and again, the one scene that pretty much everybody uses as a meme is, I'm doing my part. And, you know, it's funny because, okay, I guess you could see them saying I'm doing my part to be, you know, I guess it could be a normal thing. But then all of a sudden you have this little kid pop out of nowhere and say, I'm doing my part too during the military. And it's like that just right there alone watching this movie, you cannot take it seriously. It's unbelievable to me that people from the very beginning were watching this and they're like, huh, that's interesting. What's Paul Verhoeven trying to say here?
Verhoeven is a fascist?
Yeah. It's just so silly because the movie itself, you know, in all of those propaganda pieces that are sprinkled throughout, which, again, are done very well, just like Verhoeven's RoboCop. You know, RoboCop has a lot of, you know, satirical commercials included in it. And here, you know, Verhoeven is doing the whole thing again with a propaganda piece where you're seeing all these different propaganda videos sprinkled throughout while you're watching the narrative. It's hard to imagine people just watching this and taking it at face value, because I don't understand it. I don't understand how they can not see it as a satirical movie. And one of my critiques a little bit is that it almost feels a little too on the nose, in my opinion. You know, it's very in your face, explicit that this is a satirical, you know, parody of propaganda videos. And it's just hard for me to understand where people were coming from. I just don't see it.
It's funny because it's so overtly mocking, you know, that style of, you know, fascism, that for people to be like, for their takeaway to be on that, it's like, wow, Verhoeven's really making fascism look good. No, like that's like how, like, you know, I think the only people, if you watch something like this and that's your takeaway, like, he's really, you know, really making that fascism look good and look kind of appealing, and he had some good points. You're just a silly person, because it's fascism itself is a ridiculous concept. One that, you know, grandfathers were dying on the beaches of Anzio to, you know, fight against, just, you know, for people to run back around now and be like, hey, you know what? These are some beautiful people in some gray uniforms, you know, really doing right. Might makes right. Let's go.
I know. Yeah. I mean, so what do you think, Liz, what do you think Verhoeven is trying to say in this movie in terms of, you know, all of these propaganda pieces and later on the you know, the addition of sort of showing these civilians that go into, you know, the military, and they get put in different places. You know, obviously Casper Van Dien's character is the mobile infantry. So on the ground, boots on the ground, people who are, you know, literally, they say at one point, thrown into the meat grinder. And then you have the fleet command, which is more of like the sort of like the Air Force, Space Force of the group.
Your mixture of the Kriegsmarine and the Luftwaffe.
And then you have the scientists too, right? So,
like it, which is basically, well, yeah, because Neil Patrick Harris is the smartest of the bunch, and he's a telepath, so he gets put into military intelligence. And which is, he's basically, if again, you can't tell that this is, you know, again, like very being on the nose, as you were saying, their outfits are literally like Gestapo uniforms. Like, you know, he's like walking around with like the like SS Gestapo like hats, and it's like, oh, this is great. But yeah, in this world, there's a different, you know, you're not a citizen in this unified Earth if you don't serve. You know, you're only a civilian, and to be a citizen, you have to serve, because this society values service to the country, you know, nationalism, you know, above all else, which that's also what the book's about, because the original 1953, whatever the hell that book got written, 53 55.
Yeah, somewhere in the 50s, definitely. I think it released in 59 or something, but it was originally published in a magazine in like a shortened version, and then, you know, released as a novel form.
You know, it is like, you know, like a pro-fascist work, so.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of interesting because this movie, you know, it, being adapted from, is it Robert Heinlein? A. Heinlein's novel. Is kind of the opposite of what Heinlein actually meant. Like, Verhoeven is presenting it in a satirical manner, and yet what he's presenting is kind of what Heinlein actually meant. Now, I haven't read the novel myself, but I have read, you know, the synopsis and, you know, kind of the political bent of Heinlein himself. And he was more on, you know, he was about the individual, you know, basically being a component of the whole. And they had a moral obligation to be part of that whole. And so, you know, even if that is the risk to the individual, you have the moral obligation to do that. And so this movie kind of takes that and kind of flips it on its head, because we do see multiple times where Casper Van Dien's character, first of all, he's very much an idiot, because he's literally enlisting in the army because he wants to be closer to his girlfriend, Carmen, and played by the Richards.
I was gonna say wooden board. Which, to be fair, listen, in 1997, I mean, Denise Richards, you know, was
it girl,
one of like every, you know, every boy's fantasies, you know.
Yeah,
she got the line when she was a Bond girl in The World Is Not Enough as Christmas Jones. At the end, Pierce Brosnan goes, I thought Christmas only came once a year.
I mean,
a witty Bond line for the movie, for the show.
I mean, I can understand to a certain extent. So it's kind of like the whole idea, you know, if this were a high school drama, he would be going to the same college as Denise Richards' character because, you know, he wanted to follow in her footsteps or whatever, you know.
It's Dawson's Creek, but in space.
Exactly, exactly. And Buenos Aires, which is, you know, its own interesting component of the movie, that it take, you know, the original area takes place in Buenos Aires. It's just not like a common location for movies. But yeah, so you've got Van Dien's character, Johnny Rico, who, you know, he's like the star of the school. He's doing ridiculous acrobatics during his ball game.
It's like the stupidest, like, it's like fucking like arena football, because it's like played on like a field that's only like 2 feet long, so it's like what the hell are they doing? But they're also like doing backflips over each other to like catch the ball. But they are very progressive, because Diz is the quarterback, so you got a lady throwing that, slinging that pigskin around.
23rd century, very progressive. At least good to see. But you know, Johnny Rico is like the classic jock guy of this movie, except for the fact that he's following Carmen, and Carmen's the one that really wants to enlist. She wants to do her duty. She wants to become a fleet pilot, and he follows her into the what do they call that? What is it called? Like the United Force? What's the official title of the whatever the United Citizen Federation? Sorry,
yeah.
He follows her into this, and he gets, because he doesn't do well in school. He's not a pilot guy. He gets put in because, and actually also too, it's important to note that everybody that enlists is going to get used somewhere. It's kind of not like in the same situation of what we have right now, where if you enlist and you, you know, you're not in good health, you're not in good shape or anything, they're going to turn you away. They're going to say, like, we can't use you. What do you, you know, you have no skills. So we're going to turn you away unless you're getting obviously like drafted or something like that. But in this movie, everybody who enlists is going to get used, and we're going to use you, and we'll throw you on the front lines. You'd be fodder for the fucking arachnids,
well,
the bugs.
Well, what's great too is when they're taking their oath of service, they're all there as a group, and they're like, I promise to, you know, serve the Federation with pride. You know, I am expected to do a service of no less than 2 years, and as long as they determine I need.
Yeah, exactly. As long as I'm needed. So, you know, and it's funny too, because that's exactly the point, you know, that Verhoeven's making, is when you enlist, you think like, oh, I'm going to, you know, they're going to pay for my college here. I'm going to enlist and I'll get my college paid for and we'll be all set and I'll get out in a few years and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's like, well, it doesn't always happen that way. Or you're going to get out and you're going to be maimed. So, you know, it's kind of that.
Which is also the best part too, like when they're like enlisting too, because the recruitment lister, he's like, ah, pilot, so you're the brains. And then Neil Patrick Harris comes up and he's like, oh, games in theory, you're military intelligence. Don't worry, son, I'll probably be saluting you the next time I see you. And then he goes to Rico and he's like, ah, what are you? I got mobile infantry, sir. He's like, ah, yes, mobile infantry. It's what made me the man I am today. And he goes to shake his hand, and he's got a robot a hand, and then he looks down, and the guy's missing two knees. Like, but it's just so great. Like, it's so funny. Like, because it's like, he says it with such pride. Like, ah, yes, the mobile infantry made me the man I am today.
It's,
the film doesn't do a good job of portraying it, but part of the reason, too, that also Rico is going in is because his family aren't citizens. They're civilians.
Yes.
They're wealthy, but they're not citizens because, and his parents have different aspirations for him. They want him to go to college. You know, they have money, so they don't really, you know, worry about that kind of crap. And they don't want him going off and, you know, dying on some random planet.
Even in the 23rd century, Harvard's still a thing for the rich hoity-toity folk. Because they're like, no, you're going to Harvard.
It's an it's a 1 hour, you know, under tunnel, you know, train to from Buenos Aires to up to Boston. Yeah. Then, but
yeah, but like, yeah. So again, all of these things add up, and it's like, how, again, Verhoeven does not make it look appealing to be enlisting into, you know, the military. It's not like all of this is like so super cool and like. Once he gets into, you know, the military, they're like handing him a gun and it's so awesome. Like and I guess going back to what I was saying, like, it's a very stupid idea to enlist just because your girlfriend really wants to. They're not even together. They get separated because she's in the fleet command. So it's not like they're, you know, going to be training together or anything like that. So they really don't have anything in common once they enlist. And then later on, Denise Richards has to break it to him. Sorry, man. It's not working out for us because I've got Xander up here feeling my thigh every time we're going out on a mission.
Listen, and, he's got the most perfect 90s like bedhead, like, you
he's
know,
got the yeah, he's got
douchebag,
the
douchebag, like, you know,
Josh
Matthew
Hartnett prior to Josh Hartnett in the Faculty,
Matthew Lillard, you know, yeah. Just, you know,
it looks like, in, you know, his hair in this movie looks like you tried really hard to get bedhead, because it has like that, like, sort of like, yeah, wet quality to it all the time. Like, he's always looking sweaty wet. I don't know why your hair is so sweaty.
Well, it's funny too, because when they're doing the football part, and because he's playing, they're playing against Xander in that football game, he's sweating pro.
I know.
Personally, like, he's just yeah. running around. It's kind of like the meme of, like, you know, like, oh, God, just, like, sweat, you know.
His hair kind of reminds me of, like, a fucking mop, you know? Because it's got the sweat pouring out of it. It's like, just wring it out.
Not only that, too, I can smell the aqua velvet, like, on him from, like, a mile away. Yeah. Like, you know, he's the guy that's got, like, you know, 10 things of bod sprays. Oh, yeah. Denise is going to love this.
But, yeah, I mean, it leads us to, like, it's a stupid reason to enlist, and he goes and enlists, and then he gets put into mobile infantry where, literally, yes, it's going to be a meat grinder. They're all on the ground, basically running in to planets, like Planet P, that are overrun with bugs, and what are they doing? They literally are on, like, a metal platform base. They don't have even, like, a base. It's just, like, a wall and a platform, and that's their base. And then they're wondering, like, why are we getting overrun, you know, constantly?
If you think about it, this film had the budget was $100 million. You gotta think somebody was pocketing it, because they basically shot in a giant laser tag course. Like, this whole film is like shot like a, you know, just giant laser tag course. Not only that, too, the tactics are like very just like, yeah, whatever, because they're not smart, because they're all just running around with rifles, just, you know, plugging, like, putting 200 rounds into each bug. There's like,
yeah,
that's on that, like, one fort you're talking about, they only had that one emplacement of, like, machine guns, like, guarding it. Like, this, you know, you would think, like, you know, in the future they'd be smart enough to have, you know.
That's what I was saying. They should upgrade their artillery, because they're clearly, and one thing I will say, too, about this movie is that it's inconsistent with how it portrays, like, being able to shoot the bugs. So sometimes it looks like the bugs are, like, ridiculously armored. You're, like, you know, they're coming at them and they're shooting 200 rounds into them and they're not dying. And then at other times, like, when they're in the cave, they're, like, shooting them twice and the bugs are keeling over and dying. So it is inconsistent in how it works. But you're, like, I was thinking, no, you guys need better artillery at some, in some level. Like,
well, you would think, especially too in 23rd century, like, if you got, you know, faster than light and space travel, what are you doing? And you're using mini nukes to clear out bug holes. Like, what are you doing? Still relying on, like, old, you know, the old assault rifle. Yeah. You'd think you'd have something better to take them out.
Yeah. So the first part of the movie is, you know, basically school and then training, especially Casper Van Dien's training as Johnny Rico, as he goes into the, you know, the mobile infantry. And basically we're subjected to a bunch of people who, you know, would eventually become bigger names. But right now in this movie, I feel like they weren't really recognized. Like we already talked about Neil Patrick Harris, but we've also got like Jake Busey shows up here. He's I wouldn't say bigger name.
Is probably his mid-90s is where, like, he was getting roles, you know, left and right.
Yeah, but don't discount him in Christmas with the Cranks. You know, he's awesome, you know. But
the same thing, too, though, where you were saying, like, the cast is biff. Pish posh. Our stars are biff. But fucking the supporting cast is, like, top-notch, like, just great. Yeah. You know, Clancy Brown is one of the best drills and sergeants of all time. Like, he's just whipping everybody's ass and, you know, being just a miserable bastard.
I know, breaking that dude's arm right away. Like,
yeah.
He's like, I think my arm is broken, sir.
When he got that one guy, when he was laughing to start running the course, he's like, run! And he starts smacking him in the ass with the baton. And as he's like, start running the course, the one guy's like running, he's like, keep track of him. And the guy instantly whips out his baton and starts following him and whipping him in the ass, like, as he's running around and, you know.
I mean,
Dean Norris as, like, the general there, Dean Norris, Michael Ironside as the teacher, you know, wow, it's great.
It's great. And Clancy Brown is excellent in this movie, especially, you know, some of my favorite parts of this movie are the training elements to it, because I feel like it's where the film comes together in terms of, like, kind of lampooning the military in some aspects. Because you got Clancy Brown there, and he's looking on with such respect during some of those scenes where it's kind of a montage of Johnny Rico doing well, like where he does that stupid fucking 5-6-3 flip over people during the laser tag tournament. You know, it's the same move that they used in their whatever that football arena football game was. But yeah, you see him looking on in the background, and it's sort of like this movie's Silent Night, Deadly Night montage. of just looking on and appreciation.
I was hearing when they did that, I heard, "Hear me thunder and lightning."
Yeah. But it is quite interesting that later on, you know, Johnny Rico does such a good job. And then you go up to that point where he's made squad commander. And then they're in one, you know, live training session where they have live rounds. And that guy, you know, the guy Breckenridge comes up to him. He's like, "I can't see." He's like, "Permission to take off my helmet." And Johnny Rico's like, "Sure, go ahead, man. Take off your helmet." And he gets fucking zapped right away. Head blasted apart.
By friendly fire, because I'm pretty sure it was Diz that got, like, you know, as she was bitching at him.
Was it? I didn't even realize that,
was,
to be honest.
I think it was Diz that was bitching at him, like, because he's like, "Well, God damn it, Breckenridge, why is this always you?" And she's like, "It's not my fault, I can't see." And then she gets zapped and she's holding down the trigger and it blasts him in the head. But that's great, though, because that's where you get him go, you know, they zoom in on, you know, John on Rico and you, you know, just yelling, "Nada!" "Rico, you are leaving the squad duty."
I mean, it's great, yo, because, and it kind of shows that downfall, and it's a really nice, like, segue into talking about, like, the elements of, you know, being in the mobile infantry. You kind of have this constant danger. Like, even in this training session, there's a danger they're going to get, you know, killed in their own training session. And, you kind of see the failure of Johnny Rico. He's not really, you know, even though he's really good at doing certain things, like kind of leading his team during like games, in a real life situation, maybe he doesn't make the right decisions. Maybe he's not as good at doing that. And it's because his head's really not in it, because he didn't fucking want to be in the mobile infantry to begin with. It's kind of like, you know, it was like a decision that he made on the spot. And it's kind of a nice little element. So parts of this movie, like, I feel like probably the first hour, even though it doesn't have the action with the bugs, is probably some of my favorites, because you get the propaganda pieces sprinkled throughout. You know, you got some of those great ones. One of the ones that I really like a lot is when they show, like, all of the dead people at the base, just, like, all mutilated on TV. And you're like, "Do you want to know more? Go on.
Would you like to know more?
Go on and click on it. See all the mutilated bodies and see what, you know, what we're fighting for." So, yeah, I really like that first.
Oh, no, I was saying another great one, too, from the little propaganda bits is tonight, it's man has been convicted of murder. Tonight at 6 o'clock is execution.
Live execution. Yeah.
On every channel, you know, would you like to know more?
And I feel like the propaganda videos themselves are really where, like, reviewers were saying, like, "Oh, the acting's bad." It's like, yeah, but it's meant to be. It's like clearly meant to be bad in the propaganda videos. It's, you know, it's not like Clancy Brown's not putting in a terrible performance. Dean Norris isn't putting in a terrible performance. Michael Ironside is fucking amazing in this movie. So I don't know who you're seeing as, you know, in the over the topness too, is something that's meant to be in this movie.
And the film gets more like kooky and cartoony as it goes on.
It definitely
spirals, like, especially near the end where, like, all the fighting and stuff's going on. Yep. It definitely kind of goes off the rails.
I was actually gonna ask you about that, like, how do you feel about the actual bug fighting towards, like, the you know, after the first hour we get into the second act? It definitely, like, to me, it seems like the second hour kind of, even though there's a lot of fighting, a lot of action, a lot of bugs and stuff, second hour kind of wanes a little bit more for me. It's not as crisp. It's not as, you know, it's as fast paced and moving, even though you would think so with the action, at least in my opinion. What do you think about that?
I agree, because I think by today's standards, the action is very pedantic, because it's very much them just standing and walking in circles, you know, just firing a million rounds with by today's standard, incredibly poor CGI arachnids.
Yeah.
You know, and I think more of, like, those battle bits, what makes those bits better, like, some of the stuff that's going on, like that whole holding down that fort at port, you know, on Planet P, where all the, like, the millions of arachnids, like, you know, which is still impressive work, actually. When they zoom out, you see them all, like, you know, all that CGI. Like, it's not impressive, but it is impressive, though, like, the number they got onto the screen, you know, at that time. But like Michael Ironside's, you know, bits like of being like when the one guy gets captured, he shoots the guy in the chest. I expect each and every one of you to do the same for me. You know, that's great. Or when that general's like, we're all going to die. We're all going to die. You know, those are the fun parts. And then when the poor Michael Ironside gets, you know, eaten in half and he's like, Rico, do it.
Yes. Yeah. Because he's, you know, we do see that scene early on where he shoots the guy that's getting taken away by the bug. And he's like, I expect you to do the same for me. So it's kind of a great lead up to it. But I love Michael Ironside in this. He's really great. But I definitely agree with you in that, you know, maybe for one thing, the CGI definitely, you know, it's certainly feels dated. I think when it does do some more of the practical effects, it's pretty cool because you do have kind of like a, you know, like a nice meatiness to some of the bugs and things like that. But yeah, the CGI elements don't look that great. And I feel like just the action itself is kind of, it's kind of poorly paced in my opinion, because I feel like maybe a little bit too much, and then it kind of pads out the running time a little bit for the movie. How do you feel about Diz's death?
Sad. She's one of the best.
I
out of all the leads, Dina Mayer is easily the best, and not just because she shows her boobies liberally in this.
liberally.
I mean, she does. I mean, the whole, you know, they made sure in the shower scene, like as you see everyone's ass, you know.
Oh yeah, Casper Van Dien's ass.
Yeah, which is great too. When he walks out, and he gets slapped on the ass. Gets a big old good game as he's walking out, you know. But she's great. Like Diz is a lot of fun. I feel, you know, gotta feel bad for her too, because you know she's just so in love with Johnny, but Johnny won't give her the time of day because he loves Denise Richards, you know, the charisma vacuum, and. Yeah. She's constantly, you know, because she also joined the mobile infantry to follow Johnny. And, you know.
Well, it's
at the,
nice.
At the end, you know, like when they're like having, which that party too, leading up to before that battle where, the, you know, her and Michael Ironside die in that fork, you know, it's great too, because Michael Ironside, you know, as, you know, she's hitting on him, he goes, son, you asked me once, you know, for advice. And because he used to be his teacher too. And he goes, I have some advice for you. Don't turn down a good thing. And, you know, Casper Van Dien's basically like, you're right. You know, I don't really, my heart's not in it, but I mean, she's going to give me blowies.
That's right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It was kind of a really dickish thing, too, because not only does he just turn her down, she just asks him for a dance, and he's like, do I have to pull rank? And then literally she just forgives him right away. He's just like, you know what? Since we're going to be fucking later, I thought I'd come on over and give you a dance here.
Yeah,
I won't pull rank.
And not only that, too, they do fog, which is funny, too, because Michael Ironside's like, Rico, we have that. He's like, who's that underneath your blanket? And she pops up and she's like, it's Flores, sir. He goes, make that 20 minutes.
I know.
But yeah, no, she dies. And when she dies, she's like, she gets a pathetic death, because even though she like gets, you know, a very cool and violent death, she gets to, you know, be on the flight out and being like, I got to have you, Johnny. And then she dies, and within 5 minutes, Casper Van Dien don't give a shit.
That's right.
He's already been like,
he's moving on.
He's already like, look, Carmen's back over there. Carmen.
Yeah, then that's the thing too with this movie. Like I, like you said, I think Dina Meyer does a really, really great job in this movie. She's can play both sultry, she can play like playful, she can do like she also is like one of the guys too in this movie. I think she does a really great job. I think one of the big problems with Starship Troopers is sometimes tonally it doesn't really know how to address things. Like so you definitely get a lot of that satirical nature from Verhoeven about war and enlisting and military. But then again, you get really melodramatic moments at times where it's almost, you're kind of left to question, like, is this like, is it supposed to be melodramatic, or is it just seeming that way? Like, is it just, you know, did we go a little over the top with the melodrama? And I feel like with This Is Death, that's kind of where it occurs, where it's kind of like overly sympathetic and emotional in a movie that truly most of the time is not. So I think tonally it kind of gets in its own way at times. And that leads to the end of the movie too, where I feel like the end of the movie doesn't do a really good job of coming to the same conclusions that the, you know, the first hour has been setting out of, like, the, you know, satirically parodying going into the military and fascism and things like that, because it does come to a sort of a triumphant conclusion that, I don't know, I feel like...
Well, I think that's kind of fine, though, because by the end, you know, they capture the brain bug, which is great, too, because you find out that Zim, you know, Clancy Brown's the one that captures him, and he's back down to private, because in the scene where Rico is, you know, looking to leave, you know, the mobile infantry because he failed when the Breckinridge got killed during that thing, he wants to wash out. He's like, doing this for the wrong reasons. My heart's not in it and I want out. Well, we get the great moment of we're going to war with the bugs because they dropped an asteroid on Buenos Aires and they killed millions. The Latin paradise known as Buenos Aires, gone forever. And you just see like the death toll like climbing. And what's great is during that scene, you know, where Dean Norris is saying, "You already signed your paperwork. You're out of here, bud." And then and Zim was saying how he wants to go back to fight, and they're not going to let him because he's too important as a drill sergeant. So he's got to bust himself down to private if he wants to make that happen. So he just takes the paperwork in front of, you know, of Casper Van Dien's and rips it in front of Dean Norris like, "Oh, looks like you're good to me." So he gets, you know, bust back down to private, gets sent out to the front line. You know, Casper Van Dien by the end's a lieutenant because everyone dies around him. And they get that nice triumphant, because, I mean, it makes sense for it to, like, end on that triumphant note. Because, again, like, it's like that brimming, like, fascist notion. Like, yes, we will win. We will keep fighting. We have great soldiers like Captain Carmen Ibanez. And soldiers like Lieutenant Johnny Rico in the mobile infantry, you know. They'll keep fighting. And they'll win, you know. I think it's fine that it ends on that kind of triumphant note, because, again, it's supposed to be like, you know, even the darkest days when, you know, the Russians were knocking on the door of Nazi Germany, they were still like, "Come on, guys, if you get your children out there and in the defense of Berlin, we will beat them back. Just we got to hold out a little longer. Come on, guys, you got this. Let's go." You know, so... I'm fine with that.
I mean, I like it. I just feel like it doesn't come to enough of a like satirical conclusion. I would have preferred if, like, at the end we see like we were the ones, you know, the Earth is the ones that actually colonized the bugs, because you don't really see much in the way of.
They do. I think that's something from the book. They do kind of like mention that, like, it's like that, like, it's not like defense actually, like, it's
right,
actually,
you know. yeah the film doesn't really have that sort of element to it. It actually does make the bugs out to be, you know, the bad guys. They're the ones that literally are wiping Buenos Aires off the map, and, you know, they're the ones that are colonizing planets all over. So I guess I would have liked kind of like to go that route and show, well, you know, we kind of did it to ourselves here.
They kind of do when they mention the whole Mormon, you know, the Mormons getting wiped out by the... Oh, excuse me. Got an indigestion right now. The Mormons getting wiped out by the bugs on that one planet. Where that's where they're showing, like, all those bodies being ravaged that you're talking about more. But they make it sound like, you know, those fucking idiot Mormons went out to the quarantine zone and got themselves killed, you know?
Yeah. What do you think?
You know what else? Oops, I was gonna say, you know what else is great?
What's that?
Having a space station named Ticonderoga.
Yeah.
You know, it's like only an hour from here. It's great. It's great hearing things like that.
What do you think about the, like, the ultra violence in this movie? Because I remember when this came out and people were like, "Oh, that's so graphic, so violent." And, it was, you know, even at the time, I definitely, like I said, I remember watching it, you know, the brain sucking and things like that. What do you think about the gore now?
It's great. I still love it. I love, like, everyone getting their bodies, you know, ripped apart, and all the practical effects for that are really well done, look really good and gruesome still. And the whole brain bug sucking out, like, the brains, very thing, like, you know, just punking, like, a, you know, punching a hole right through the head, and, like, you know, long tendril.
Like, popping open a Capri Sun. Just,
just It's I like it, you know, really good job. Brain Bug looks stupid in the CGI, but you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I do, the gore in this is good and fun. You know, it's got a lot of good violence.
Yeah, it's you know, it's like RoboCop in the sense that sometimes it goes a little bit, you know, over the top with its violence, and it's fun to watch. What do you think about the length of the film? You think it's too long? 2 hours?
I would agree. I think 15 minutes of this, like, to make it like an hour and 45, that could have easily been done.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could do some of it with, like, some of, like, you were saying, with the end parts, with, like, the two different battles. They could kind of, you know, make it flow more into one to be more seamless. I also think some of the high school stuff could have been cut, too, because a lot of it, a lot of the high school stuff is very kind of, like, tertiary and, you know, Dawson's Creek bullshit, just kind of like, or let's, come on, guys, let's make a promise. We'll be friends forever. I'm just in my head thinking of, like, every high school film at the time. Like, I got American Pie, like, ingrained in my head. We're going to make a pact that we're going to lose our virginity night of the prom.
That's right.
But, yeah, I definitely could use a little trimming. I don't think, like, the 2 hours, and I don't think it's insufferable. I think even at its length, it is still a lot of fun, and it is, you know, decently enough paced. But I could see where, you know, people might find certain parts of it to be a slog.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Because I kind of found it, you know, and I think, again, it is in that second act, last half, where it sort of slows down a little bit. Even though you're getting all that action, it still slows down a little bit, and could have just had a little bit of it cut, I think.
Now, I can't say for particular, like, part of the problem is, like, our main cast outside of, you know, Dina Meyer is very just vapid and soulless. But for Denise Richards, I believe that because she's an uncharismatic actress to begin with. I think this is, like, the only Casper Van Dien film I've ever even seen him in.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't tell you if this was, like, you know, intention. Like, you know, I think to some extent it is intentional. Like, you know, for them to be very
sure
wooden and, like, stoic. But at the same time, there's a way to do it and be charismatic at the same time. And, you know, again, like, Xander and Denise, they're just so just, like, I'm the wild pilot. Yeah, you're the wild pilot. Yeah, she's the wild pilot.
Yeah, I agree, though. I think this is the only movie I've seen Casper Van Dien in. But yeah, he's there. I think you're right, at least for him, that they're trying to kind of make him be that wooden everyman character, like, sort of, you know, jock-esque. Maybe not for Denise Richards. I think that maybe just her her performance. But all right, so let's give Starship Troopers a rating. Oh, you're not ready yet? You got something else?
One more thing. What do you think of Low Rent Janeway in this film?
Who?
Low Rent Janeway. Denise's captain of that ship.
Oh, right. Yes. Hilarious. She
always reminds me of, like, just like, man, it's almost like they were like, just like, pretend like it's Catherine Mulgrew being Janeway, but not quite.
You know? Yeah.
You know, I one of the scenes from, like, when the ship is, like, you know, gets split in half and, like, she gets trapped under the door, pressure door, and it cuts her in half. And that's something that's always stuck with me. That's always been really cool. It's like, oh, that's
I
so
do
awesome.
Yeah, I remember that from this movie, and I think also the movie Sphere. Do you remember Sphere? You see that movie back in the 90s too? There's a scene in Sphere that's very similar to that where they, you know, they have, like, a partition door and cuts them in half. Yeah. That one, those have always stuck with me as well, but it's fun times. Yeah,
that's also another fun part of the film that's always stuck in my head. Like, it's like, oh, that's so cool. And she's like, it's trapped under the door. And just,
yeah, there's a few sequences where people, you know, kind of get cut in half and then they, like, drag, you know, like that happens with Michael Ironside's character too, where the bug's under the dirt and he gets eaten, and they pull him out, and he's like missing. He, like, looks down. You know, it happens a couple times.
He's like, I already lost a goddamn hand. I'm not.
That's right. Yeah. All right. So, on a scale of 0 to 10 Jake Busey teeth, what do you give Starship Troopers?
I'll give it 8.5
Okay.
Teeth. I love, like, I this film's a lot of fun. I love it. It's, I got a lot of nostalgia for it. Again, I've seen this film a billion times. Like I said, going into it, I didn't even have to watch the film going into it to, like, you know, make good, well, not, I won't say good, sufficeable for a podcast commentary on it. But I think it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, got that great aesthetic to it. A lot of, you know, really cool sci-fi elements to it, you know, inspiring, you know, things from Halo and Helldivers and such. I think Verhoeven does a good job at satirizing, you know, fascism itself and how kind of silly it is. The supporting cast in this is terrific. Michael Ironside is great. Clancy Brown is fucking great. You know, Dina Mayer does a great job too. Even though she's like top three billing, she's definitely more of a supporting character. She's a great job too. Just a lot of fun, a lot of good gore. It's the action, you know, the CGI doesn't really hold up too well. But I still think it's, you know, a lot of fun. It can be slow paced at times, but I think you should watch it. I think, like, it's just a lot of good fun. Yeah. And it's, there's a reason why it's definitely like RoboCop, and Total Recall, a film in Verhoeven's canon that's, well, you know, remembered, and why it's still in the cultural zeitgeist. So I'd say 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I give this an 8 out of 10. I think it's a pretty good movie. There are some things about it that I think, you know, haven't aged that well, including the CGI, but for the most part, it's fun. Like I said, the first hour of training and things like that, I think, is where the film really excels. The propaganda videos, all the satirical nature of, you know, being in the military, things like that, you know, serving while also people don't really care about you serving and you're just kind of, you know, fodder for the meat grinder and we'll get more people later on. I really like that element to it. And I think it comes out the most in the first hour. Second hour is good. You know, that's where all the bug action happens, all the blasting and stuff. But I don't think it, you know, I don't think it's paced as well. So even though there's like a lot of nice special effects there, special practical effects that we get, it's just not as evenly paced, I think, as the first hour. I do think that it does run a little bit long, but it's not really that much of an issue. There's like 9 minutes of credits too, which I thought was kind of interesting because it's a 2-hour, 9-minute movie and it ends like pretty much smack dab on the 2-hour mark and you got 9 minutes of credits. So, but I think it's a really, it's a fun movie. It's definitely still fun today, even after, you know, seeing it when I was a lot younger. Also, a lot of those scenes really stood out to me again, and I remembered a lot of them, especially, you know, I don't know why, but, you know, as a prepubescent or early pubescent kid, remember that shower scene pretty well. I don't know, you know, made an impression, I guess. But other than that, yeah, it's a fun movie. It's got a lot of great, you know, moments that Verhoeven does very well with the propaganda or satirical commercials, and definitely one to check out if you haven't seen it.
So we never mentioned, which I totally forgot, that Dina Meyer was in some of the Saw films as Carrie.
That's right. The cop, right?
Yes. Yeah. That she gets ripped apart. You know,
I forgot too, but she's in, I think, what, Saw 1 and 2? I believe she's in both.
2, 3, and 4.
Oh, she's in all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in like 3 and 4, she's like a callback or something.
Yeah. Like just like a flashback sort of thing. Yeah. I forgot about that too.
So here's the fun part, because one of our long running jokes, and well, not jokes, because he's a man of great taste and refinement. Going back to the early days when we did the Saw franchise, Casas Mandalore. Casas Mandalore and Dina Mayer starred in a TV show together. Secret Agent Man only ran for one season on UPN in 2000. Starred Costas Mandalore and Dina Mayer.
Ooh.
Wow. Talk about a small fucking world.
Yeah, tie in there, huh?
Which is funny, because I don't remember that show being on UPN Because I was watching a lot of, you know, Thursday Night SmackDown back then for WWE, and I would have remembered, like, them playing ads for this left and right, but I just remember the Monisha ad, so. Yeah, I guess probably that's why it didn't, that's why it didn't work out.
It's weird. Yeah, it's weird. It's a good,
Who knows? We should watch it. It could be just like Firefly. You know, we'll make this, you know, Firefly. We're going to bring it back.
That's right.
So what do we got next time?
Next time. I don't know. What, anything special coming up? Easter. But we've already exhausted the one Easter movie that I know of. We got to do more Leprechaun movies, right? We still got a few. We have Leprechaun Origins, I think. The fucking Leprechaun Origins. We got Leprechaun Returns. So we still got a couple of those to do. And not that they're necessarily tied into the actual Leprechaun series, but, you know, we could get a nice little Irish ale to go along with it. But, Leprechaun Origins. I've never seen the rest of the Leprechaun movies, so that's a possibility. What day is St. Patrick's Day? I think it's, is it the 21st?
No, I don't fucking know.
No, not the 21st. It is the 17th. So
I was hoping you totally forgot about it.
I did not. And again, that's kind of be an interesting one because I've never seen it and it really has nothing. You know, it doesn't even have the one saving grace of the Leprechaun films, which is Warwick Davis.
It has Hornswoggle from WWE.
Yeah, yeah. So, be an interesting one. So we could do that. Or we could just say, let's skip St. Paddy's Day this year and do something else. Huh? Guess we'll talk about it and see what we want to do. Well, thanks for listening to our episode on Starship Troopers. Hope you enjoy. Hope you get out there into Helldivers too and join the already suffering servers.
Oh, they're not suffering.
Yeah, they've expanded now, huh?
Do your part.
That's right.
They need you on the front. Managed democracy needs you.
If you want to subscribe and check out what we're doing next time on our show, you can find us on pretty much any podcast app you can think of. We're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. I don't even know if some of those are available anymore. But whatever you use as podcast apps, we're on it, and our home base is like Spotify. So,
are we thinking about doing another Difficult Films month?
That would be kind of fun. Yeah, that'd be fun. Difficult Films is good. I would need to consult my Difficult Films handbook and find some more. But
that's easy. Funny Games U.S.
I know. Yeah, we could return to it. See what
that Straw Dogs like. U.S.
That's right. Yeah, right. Okay, let's just do the new remakes of them. But yeah, that would be fun. Difficult Films, I like that. I like that idea. Pick some good ones. Hopefully they'll be more difficult for you because I feel like the first round wasn't that difficult. Besides, I think the only one was Requiem for a Dream was like the one that you said was like one of the most.
It was Antichrist.
Antichrist. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we can do that. So listen in, subscribe, leave us a nice review. Appreciate that. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for us on there, Blood and Black Rum Podcast. And we have an email address, bloodandblackrumpodcast@gmail.com, where you can write to us. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, what movies you want us to watch, and we'll take that into consideration. And then finally, you can donate to us on our Patreon page or at our Spotify page. And whatever you can give, we'll put back towards beer. So we appreciate that in advance.
Oh, Madam Webb.
Oh, Madam Webb.
That'd be a difficult film.
That'd be a difficult film. Yeah.
We'll do a Morbius
Madam Webb double feature. It'd be very difficult.
Battlefield Earth.
Yeah, I've never seen that one. I've never seen it. Yeah. Yeah, we're going in a different direction for difficult films. For the difficult films this time. Geely will be another one.
Oh, that's a good one.
I've never seen it. No, never seen it.
Yeah. So. You might as well just watch Made in Manhattan. That has at least Ralph Fiennes in it.
Yeah. Well, check us out next time. We'll be back in a little bit. So thanks a lot for listening. Hope you enjoyed the episode on Starship Troopers, and we hope to see you back next time. Until then,
take care.